Well, this morning we continue our coverage of the report into the review of deaths in the province's correctional facilities. Late last week, the St. John's Status of Women Council came out in support of the recommendations in that Inside Marlene Jessel's report. This morning I'm joined by a woman who has spent time as an inmate at the Clarenville Correctional Centre for Women. Now, we're going to protect her anonymity. We'll refer to her as Susan. Susan's here along with Bridget Clark, who is the Community Outreach and the Safe Harbour Outreach Project at the St. John's Status of Women Council. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
So we've talked about this review many times since its release. For you, Bridget, if these recommendations are fully implemented, will that address the problems in Clarenville adequately?
I want to say just first and foremost that we want to, first of all, offer our sympathy continually to the families of those and the loved ones of folks who have died in our prisons, just for anyone who might be listening and who's still carrying that today. There are many findings and recommendations that we support that we think would have, you know, vast and widespread changes within the prisons and outside. A few of them specifically that we especially support are the alternatives to incarceration that Marlene Jessel outlined that we believe would be trauma-informed and community-based. We also really support her call for gender-based, trauma-informed best practices within women's prisons.
Susan, having read the report, do you think the recommendations made would have saved the lives of those lost in the prison, Sky Martin and Samantha Piercy?
I think that the report itself is very well written, very well put together. However, as discussed previously in many other reports, it's not something that hasn't already been said. The government needs to take all previous recommendations, which the majority of them are in here again today, and implement them.
And because they're not high tech, we're talking about common sense in many cases here when we look at these recommendations. Susan, once again for you, what more needs to be done? It's not even just about keeping women out of prison and options for incarceration, but to prepare them for the release and ongoing monitoring while they are indeed incarcerated.
From my experience, it's goes back to putting these support plans in place and making sure that women have, when they leave a correctional facility, whether it be a federal or provincial, that these support plans are followed through on. In a lot of aspects, they are. In my experience, with me personally, they were. However, I know and I work with numerous women who, once they walk through those doors, they don't have adequate housing. They don't have child care. They don't have access to money. It could take sometimes up to a month to receive funding from AES. So having a support plan in place and someone that you can reach out to when you walk through those doors is key.
Bridget, for you, you talk about options versus incarceration, such as...
Well, I think that this is really a much bigger conversation. I think that community organizations who are supporting women and all people kind of before, during, and after incarceration need to be consulted with. I think people who have experience within the prisons and the criminal justice system themselves need to be consulted with. I think that that is hopefully a much larger goal that the government will tackle and take on and respond to as a recommendation. But again, I want to stress that I think they need to be community-based. They need to be trauma-informed. I think what it means is not removing people from their communities and their families and their supports, and that if these programs and services do come to happen as alternatives to incarceration, that they absolutely need to be supported by our government through sufficient and adequate funding.
Should the approach to corrections, incarceration, supports upon release, should it be different? And how should we treat it differently when we talk about women versus men?
Well, I can speak to what we know. And so based on our community and the work of the St. John's Status of Women's Council and the programs within the organizations, what we do know is that women who are often incarcerated are living below the poverty line, who are dealing with homelessness and unstable and unsafe housing, women who are more often Indigenous and who have untreated mental health and addictions, women who've experienced sexual and physical violence. So this is really who we're talking about. And I think it's really important to address, too, that people who are disproportionately criminalized are people who are living in poverty, who have these untreated mental health care issues and addictions, who are women of color, and who are women who are engaged in sex work. So I think when we talk about gender-based best practices, it needs to take all of these things into consideration.
Are the changes that you'd like to see happen societal or political?
I think all of the above.
Okay.
I really think that one of the things that our statement called for is that beyond the institutional changes that are being recommended time and again, is that the government really directly and effectively needs to address societal issues, like you say, of poverty, of homelessness, of the really dire conditions that we know exist in terms of mental health care services in our province and the lack of addictions services. I think all of these things really do have a huge impact on who is actually incarcerated, because it's the most vulnerable people who fall between the cracks and who are suffering the most at the conditions that we're talking about, who are finding themselves in the criminal justice system.
There's a variety of prisons across the province for men and women. Well, I guess only one absolutely for women in Clarenville. Susan, we talk about Her Majesty's Penitentiary all the time. Your experience inside Clarenville's Correctional Institute for Women, do you think people really understand what goes on in there, the shortcomings, the protection of the inmates?
I think that a lot of what people see, whether it be in the media, you know, just hearing other people's stories, it's the what goes on inside, the majority of it, the average person doesn't know. The politicians don't know. The people up along don't know, because they haven't been there to experience it themselves.
Why is it important that we do know?
I think that that's why people like me coming out and speaking out as someone with lived experience in Clarenville. I also spent time at HMP when it was converted briefly for women. So there is that crossover there where people need to understand that it's not just, you know, a place that you go into and, you know, everybody sits around and it's a good time. It's not like that at all. You know, there's continuous lockdowns. There's continuous, you know, because of understaffing in the facilities, you can spend a long period of time locked down because staff have to do a medical escort. So you have 20, 30 women confined for no reason because of understaffing.
It's a human rights issue. Far too many people in the general public, they just view it as you do the crime and you do the time, and they're not worried about conditions. I so often hear say, you know, who cares? It's not supposed to be the Ritz-Carlton. But we all know that people are going to be released at some point, and their ability to reintegrate into society is going to be key. And that only works if and when we have all the appropriate approaches taken inside the walls of these correctional institutions. I appreciate you both coming in this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Susan. Good luck.
Thank you.
And that's Bridget Clark. She's a community outreach with the Safe Harbor Outreach Project, of course, under the envelope of the St. John Status of Women's Center.